My guest today is Rob Gillen. Rob, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
You are a developer by trade, but a security guy by necessity. Is that what I heard you say?
Security by by hobby, probably.
By hobby, really?
A little bit by necessity, but by hobby.
You seem to know a lot about it for just a hobbyist.
It's been fun.
But your day job is a developer, right?
It's actually a researcher. So I'm a researcher at a national laboratory here in Knoxville.
I totally had everything wrong.
That's
what do you
right.
do? Tell me what you do.
So I'm a member of the computational data analytics team at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. Mm-hmm. So I work with a team of really smart people, and I help do some of the engineering around the work that they do, so some of the research that they do, to help take the ideas that they're building and build prototypes and demos of them to help communicate what they're trying to do to other people.
Okay, I guess my assumptions were based on the stuff that you were talking about at conferences, because you're talking a lot about security,
yes.
talking a lot about software development.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. I'm a developer by trade, and I'm aware of security, but I think, like a lot of developers, I do some things wrong. I don't do enough.
That's probably true of everyone, right?
What advice can you give me?
So the biggest one is to become informed, right? So one of the things I do, and the reason I give security-related talks at developer conferences, is to help developers think about the choices that they're making when they're building applications. One of the first talks I used to give was called Security versus Convenience. And the whole point of it was to emphasize, as a developer, you're making 1,000 little choices, implementation choices every day. And you're choosing, well, am I going to use this structure or this structure? I'm going to use this algorithm or this algorithm. How am I going to go about validating input for a given method or not? And those all come with consequences. Life is about choices, and choices have consequences. And if making informed choices, informed meaning I understand all of the ramifications of the choices I'm making, is a great position to be in. Unfortunately, a lot of people write code sort of the Google method, meaning I need it to do something, mm-hmm. so I Google that rough thing, and I find a code snippet, and I copy-paste it, alter it to do what I want to do, and then go on.
All right.
Right? Which is not necessarily all that evil,
sure.
unless
solve the functional requirements.
Right. Unless you've thought through and understand the ramifications of what the choices made by the other developer might have on the application you're doing, right? Mm. So a lot of code samples are good that you find on the web are great for illustrating a particular objective, right? This is how I move data between one data structure and another, and they communicate that objective. But they often, for the sake of clarity, will remove security related features,
sure.
remove error checking, remove bounds checking, that sort of thing. And those are the types of things that can really bite you. So the point being is understanding what you're doing is the key piece. It's not just getting the job accomplished, but understanding the ramifications of the choices. So we've done talks from fun. A lot of them are, I try to pick a fun topic and then use that as, if you will, the mechanism by explaining the point. So I often will do a talk on wireless security and we go through and we crack wireless security and we show how those tools work and how easy it is, frankly, given various scenarios, to get into your wireless network.
Okay.
And
so a wireless network, like the one here at CodeStock, we're all connected to the internet that way.
Not all of us are.
No? You have your own private little network.
I am not connected at all to the conference.
You're inherently suspicious because
I'm
you've
very
seen
suspicious.
The dark side.
Yes. Well, because that's a good point, right? And there's actually, there's a gentleman walking around with a tool set that is designed to intercept traffic.
What?
And be a wild
walking around here?
Man. Yes.
Intercepting my traffic?
Yes. You were sitting near him this morning in my session. The point is there are tools and we use the Wi-Fi spec as a mechanism of explaining some of the trade-offs that were made by the implementers and how those obviously give convenience to the people consuming it,
right.
connecting to wireless networks and
I
so
just,
forth.
I just connect and our password.
Right.
Bang, I have internet adoption.
Simple example. What kind of phone do you carry?
I have a Windows phone. It's a Nokia.
Okay. So almost any phone, Windows phone included, so Windows, Android, iPhone, and so forth, when you go through and connect to a wireless network, it stores that. You put in your credentials or not. A lot of times, you know, if you're at a public space, it just says, hey, connect, and then you do some sort of portal, gated portal, right? Unless you are very diligent and go back through and either A, turn off your Wi-Fi radio when you're not explicitly using it, or you go through and tell it to forget that network, which most people don't do, your phone is constantly, when it's not associated with the network, it is constantly broadcasting the networks that you have stored and you've previously connected to. right? So it's going out and saying, hey, is the ATT Wi-Fi network from Starbucks available?
Yeah, and that's convenient because I stop at a lot of Starbucks.
Exactly. Is such and such a network available? Is Dave's home network available? It's going through the entire list, and it's constantly going through and broadcasting those. There's little packets that it's sending out saying, is this network there? Is this network there? Is this network there? Well, the device that the gentleman this morning was carrying listens for those types of packets. And all it does is as soon as it sees one of those types of packets, it creates a network with that same name and then allows you to then connect to itself.
Ah, I see.
So if
so
you,
that, and that's sufficient? My my Wi-Fi would, if it saw something called ATT Wi-Fi, it would connect to it?
It would connect to it immediately. And then your phone does what your phone does, which is as soon as it's online on a network, it starts transmitting data through it. So it checks your email, checks your updates your Twitter feeds and all that sort of thing. So depending on the security of all of those subsequent tools, your data is now passing through that person's device as a man in the middle, and he can intercept and mangle that traffic however he wants to and log it.
That's, so that's frightening.
It is frightening, right? And so we talk through different choices. Well, what could be different, right? There, the Wi-Fi spec could have been written a little differently. So rather than broadcasting the networks I'm looking for, maybe the radios would simply sit in a listen or receive only mode. And when networks are around that are broadcasting that match the security parameters that it exists,
then my phone that and they're my looking laptop for, could respond then, to that.
Right. So rather than being the client radio being proactive, it could be passive until point that the access points that it's looking for appear.
All right. Well, it's too late for us as consumers to do anything about that.
There is. I mean, there are some things you can do, right? So we talk about, you know, you can turn off, you know, only turn on Wi-Fi when you're close.
Okay.
Forget networks that you shouldn't. And there are things like if I'm connecting to a protected network, these devices can't emulate the network protection as well, so that's harder.
I mean, I have to put in a key code or something.
Right.
Like
so your phone would be configured to would say Dave's home network is a protected network. This device can't emulate the same security structure, so it would fail to connect in that scenario.
Interesting.
Right. So you're most susceptible in open Wi-Fi networks or having stored open Wi-Fi networks that this device can easily emulate the same security because there are no security parameters for it.
Interesting.
Right. So that even becomes a security versus risk conversation there, or convenience versus security risk there. As a carrier of that phone, do I want to constantly be turning my Wi-Fi on and off?
Sure.
Or do I just want to leave it on and just have it work?
Right, yeah.
And that's a very common question.
So I'll share something with you that I'm going to have to change before this is published.
Yes.
Is that a couple of years ago, my home router, it just lost its password. Something, I don't know, reset or something like that. And suddenly I didn't need a password.
Yes.
I didn't discover this until a friend came over and I didn't bother. I didn't worry about it.
Yep.
Because my thought was, well, if my neighbors want to connect and I'm not home, I'm on the road a lot, that's fine. But there's a risk that I didn't know about because now I'm broadcasting an unsecure network. Somebody else could name it the same thing.
Right.
And my my laptop would just assume.
It would just assume and it would connect.
Same one. There's no friction in connecting to it.
There's no
key code in there at all. So there's a good compelling reason to me now to go back and set that. All right. All right, I'll be home tomorrow, and this won't go out until after.
Okay, there we go. You can fix it then.
I think I can trust the people in this room.
Okay, excellent. So that's a simple example of the type of thing, right? Another example, and everyone knows this, right?
Okay.
Are things like...
You would think we'd all know that.
Well, things like validate your input on your website. So if you're building a web application and you're taking forms and input from the user, that you're supposed to assume users are evil and validate the data before you accept it.
Right.
And a lot of people, especially most of the web frameworks today, make a good attempt at making that easy for you, right? People talk about falling into success, right? Making it easy to make the right choices, even if you're not being explicit about it.
Right.
But I was given a talk yesterday, and yesterday morning, a paper was released that from a bunch of researchers out at UC Berkeley talking about a security evaluation they did of the five of the most popular password management tools. So tools that people use to help protect them online. So things like LastPass and My1Password and things like that. And what was fascinating in the conversation or in the paper is the paper dealt with some very significant errors, programming errors that were made by those companies that revealed tons of information about their users. Now, I'll be very quick to say that the researchers were very careful. They discovered it, did their research last August, and actually announced it or disclosed it to the companies last August. And within a few weeks, those were all fixed. And they're just now, almost a year later, talking about it. So there was very responsible disclosure, which is great. But what they highlight in the paper that I think was particularly salient is writing secure software is hard.
Yeah.
Right? So for example, one of the applications had a cross-site scripting vulnerability, right? Another one had a cross-site request forgery vulnerability, right?
These are applications that are designed to save your password.
Yes. Mm. So vulnerabilities in those applications could disclose to a malicious website your entire password database.
Sure.
Right? So the point is even people who, for whom it is their day job and their full-time focus, it's a hard thing to do. So others of us who are writing web applications need to also be diligent need to be similarly diligent that if we're building web applications that collect user credentials or make decisions based on user credentials or assumed to be private information, we need to be diligent about how we're implementing the tools available to us to protect that data. Now, the good news is over the last few years, the frameworks have gotten really good at giving us tools in our toolbox to protect that data, to make that, but we still have to make the right choices around them so that we do protect their data.
Good stuff. Are you writing about this somewhere?
I write a little bit about it on my blog, so it's just rob.gillenfamily.net. I'd point people to that. Another resource I'd like to recommend people view is the OWASP.net site, so OWASP.net. So that's a series of tools and posts and articles specifically on web application security.
Yep.
And they deliver tools and talks and all sorts of things, both to evaluate your website as well as to teach you how to be proactive in protecting your site.
And that's good. I think Troy Hunt contributes to that site.
Troy Hunt does it. Bill Semph.
He's been on my show.
Yeah.
Bill's been on my show.
A number of people in the security community contribute regularly to
that. I'm glad I'm at least talking to the right people.
There you go. So,
Rob, thank you so much.
Certainly. I would be wrapping this up, but we have a bunch of friends in here talking about technology really loudly.